If you see my baby Lord Mama standing around, you know it. Getting ready, honey, we gonna shake them all down, Lord, it must.
Hey, Curtis Lowe.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a Southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcast, where you can go to find any of your most preferred style of music podcast. They got lots of stuff. They're really great quality podcasts, a lot of metal stuff, anything that strikes your fancy. Go to Pantheon Podcast and listen to your favorite podcast. And I always say, hopefully, that's us. And I think Jason would say the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, if you're tuning in right now, we appreciate you, and check out some of the other podcasts on Pantheon. And by the way, Brian, what we need to remind everybody to do is, if they are following us, downloading us, whatever, we very much appreciate all your listens, but go and rate us, give us a review. That helps us, and it helps when we're trying to book guests, when people can go and see both the rating and some reviews out there. So thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you. What do we got? What do we got for news? What do we got? We got such a great lineup of guests here, four in a row. So we're cutting these all kind of close together. But
yeah, I just I guess we won't give away too much because we got some really good stuff coming. But for those of you that listen to us regularly, you're going to be very happy with some of the names that we have on here, particularly some first time guests that you're going to hear.
Yeah, a lot of closely related kind of styles of music, musicians, guitar players. So you guys will definitely dig that. So are we just going to get right into our guest?
We should, because this is our favorite person from our favorite band right now. So we are talking will just ruin it.
Well, we got Charlie Starr again, and always such a blessing to talk to him. And he's just a great guy to chat with, as everybody knows. And just great, you know, talking about the new record and talk some Grateful Dead, and always a good time.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit on the wrap up, some things I took away from it, but yeah, they're going on tour this fall, starting in November. So check them if you can on the road. We even hear Brian, we can't say, but there may be some special guests at some point. And great packages for the new record that you can get. Be Right Here. There's CD bundles, there's vinyl bundles, there's shirts that come with it, different colors. We know you love Blackberry Smoke. Take a look on their website, pre-order.
Yeah. When it comes out and vinyl's coming out with it, yeah, get that, check it out. I'm definitely going to do the same. I was fortunate enough with You Hear Georgia that, Ian Claus sent me a copy of the You Hear Georgia vinyl.
Ian Claus is known to bring joy to music listeners all around the world, Brian.
He doesn't even come down your chimney. He just walks right in the front door.
He just sends it through UPS. Yeah. Or USPS, I should say.
Yeah. All right. Listen to our conversation with Charlie, and you know, put a smile on your face. We're at the guest segment of the podcast. Jason's going to introduce our great returning guest and friend coming back again.
Yeah, I think coming back for the hat trick at this point is one of our favorite musicians from one of our favorite bands. Welcoming back to the show, Charlie Starr. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're good. We're really good.
We're good. Really we're good. You know, I was enjoying this conversation about blanket forts before we started recording. So, you know.
Yeah. It's real. It's a struggle.
Did you guys ever take like the couch cushions too to use those or like or yeah?
Yeah, still do. The thing about it is our listeners with children will understand that the building of the blanket fort, usually it might be a joint venture, but the cleaning up of the blanket fort always lands in my lap.
Of course, like a good father, right? Always all the demo and cleanup goes to the dad.
The deconstruction and the cleanup. I win that bid every time.
Well, my friend Jonathan, who's the tent sticks guy we were talking about. Jonathan, I'm throwing it out right now. We've got a celebrity endorsement. We're going to hook Charlie up with some of these things, and he's going to promote your tent sticks.
I need them. I need tent sticks. That's a good place to start.
Right. That's right.
Well, the most important thing we got to ask, follow up, like how's Britt's health? How's he doing?
He's doing great. Thank you for asking. He's been undergoing lots of treatment, you know, really for the past year. It hasn't really stopped, but he's doing great, playing his ass off. We're home now until November 2nd, but we just had a photo shoot and we have a lot of work to do on a lot of record stuff, you know, a lot of getting into gear for promoting the new album, and he's right on top of it. So he's all good. Thank you.
Right before we get into your record, what do you think of Hackney Diamonds?
I love it. I love the Stones, and as you guys do too. And so I'm hard pressed to think of even Harlem Shuffle. I even love Harlem Shuffle. So there's not really any Stones related stuff that I hate. I love their musical output. Here's my take on it. If you're interested, to me, I miss a little bit of Keith in the feel of the record. But that being said, so it might sound a little more like a Mick Jagger solo record in spots, not even entire songs, sometimes hooks and choruses. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's not, I don't think of Jagger Richards when I hear that particular melody right there or that, but I don't hate it and I don't shun it. It's almost like, I was telling my buddy at Fantasyland Records yesterday, I went and got a vinyl copy of it. And I said, it reminds me of the first time I heard Emotional Rescue when I was probably 13 or so. And I'd been listening to Hot Rocks, you know, or Sticky Fingers or whatever. And then I put on Emotional Rescue. I'm like, oh, that's different. That's a different era. You know, does that make sense?
It does. It does. I think like Sweet Sounds of Heaven has a little bit of that Shine a Light spirit. I don't mean to compare to Exile, but
yeah,
gospel magic is still there.
It is. And that was welcome. Like, well, okay, that's really, especially mixed vocal. Oh my God. It's just out of this world.
Right.
Like, I mean, what other 80-year-old person is singing with that much power? Right. That's crazy.
Right.
And you,
I
you
saw, know, go ahead.
You hear records that are where auto-tuned is used a lot. And this ain't really one of them, you know, that performance in particular, Sweet Sounds of Heaven, that's just him being powerful.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, I saw a meme go around. It was very funny. It was Mick Jagger and was a politician who was about the same age. Or like, you know, who was like drugs and rock and roll and like politics, like kind of which one was better. I was like, yeah, man, that dude looks amazing. And then he was on Saturday Night Live for a skit the past weekend too and did a phenomenal job on that.
Yeah, he is a freak of nature. The last tour, it was the first time I'd seen him with Steve Jordan, you know, and it was great. I missed Charlie's feel on some things. I mean, who wouldn't, you know?
Right.
But he did a bang up job. He was very respectful. And there were times where I just was like, it was feeling so good. I wasn't even thinking about it, you know? Mm-hmm. But he does a great job on this record too. I didn't know, not having the liner notes yet, the first time that I listened to it, the first time I streamed it on like Apple Music, I caught myself going, oh, that's Charlie right there. Cause I didn't know how many songs Charlie had tracked, you know, on the record. And then I got, and then it dawned on me, I opened the Wikipedia page, and what I thought was Charlie on two songs, it was not, it was Steve.
Oh, wow.
And, he's just playing like Charlie.
So say that says a lot about him if you didn't recognize right off the bat.
Well, you know, Charlie had the way that he, like a single stroke roll on Charlie's snare, he always led with his right hand. So it's like, taka, 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 taka. Whereas another drummer like might be, digga, 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 you know what I mean? He mm-hmm. always had that boom, boom, ba, boom, 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 dum, boom, taka, 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 psh. And Steve does that in a couple of songs. I'm like, oh, he's doing the Charlie drum roll. It's crazy.
Do you think, like, right, he was the tech for a long time with him, wasn't he? Like, he's been attached to the Stones forever.
I don't think so. He was just, you know, he was in the Winos with Keith, and he and Charlie Drayton would trade in the Winos playing bass and drums. But Steve played most of the drums. But
okay, is it the bass player then who was the tech with him? Like, I'm trying to remember. Did one of those guys step in the roles that kind of worked with those guys for a long time?
I don't think so. Because Daryl Jones played. He played with Sting and Miles Davis. I have a funny story if you have a minute.
Yes,
we got it, man.
So I have Rick Price from the Georgia Satellites, the bass player, fantastic fellow. He's an old friend. And back in the 90s, I played two shows with the Georgia Satellites, one at a little bar in Dallas, Georgia, and one a show out in Sturgis. And I wanted to be in the Georgia Satellites so badly. I really need to be in this band. And it was right at the beginning, right as Blackberry Smoke was getting started. And, but I just loved, I mean, you know, they were Atlanta heroes, you know, so, it was just fantastic to get to play music with them. But anyway, well, I was talking to, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was talking to Rick Price one day, and I went to his house, and we also shared a love of automobiles, and he had a 39 Chevrolet we were checking out. And he had auditioned for the Stones back in 90 or 91, I think, when Bill Wyman quit. Or maybe it was after that. Maybe it was before Voodoo Lounge, mm-hmm. Somewhere in the 90s, early 90s, rather. And I said, Rick, you got to tell me about auditioning for the Stones. And he said, okay. He said, I went to New York City, and I think it was SIR where they had the rehearsals. And he said, there was a bunch of people auditioning. And he said, this is my shit. If anybody can play the Stones, it's me, you know? And because he already knew Ronnie Wood and Keith, because they loved the Satellites when they broke in England in the 80s. And they were buddies. So he said, I went in, and he said, we started playing, and he said, it sounded good. It felt good. He said, everybody's grinning. And he said, I didn't even, you know, getting ready to do the audition, I didn't even know what songs to work on. I'm just like, I know all this shit. I don't need to practice this stuff. And he goes, Keith turns and goes, let's do Shattered. And he was like, uh-oh. He's like, I don't even know what key Shattered is in. So he said, I look over at Ronnie Wood, and he said, hey, you played the bass on this, didn't you? And he said, Wood, he goes, yep, which he didn't actually on that record. It was Bill Wyman. And he goes, what key is it in? And he said, F sharp. And it's not, it's in E, I think. But he said, Keith goes, no, it's not, it's in G. And he said they started arguing about what key it was in. And he said they wound up not doing it because they couldn't agree on what key it was in. So he was like, so he left. He said it was great. And he said, I knew I had done a good job. It felt, because that's the way Rick plays, you know. Mm-hmm. They all play like they could be backing up Chuck Berry, you know. That's the feel.
Yeah.
And he said, I went home, I flew home to Atlanta, and he lived in Stone Mountain. He drove home, and he said the next day, this is before widespread internet, you know. We were watching MTV News and that kind of thing. And he said Stanley Booth called him, the author, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and said, I hear you're in the Stones, man. And he's like, what? And he goes, that's what they're saying. So he said, I was like, well, I just sit and wait for the phone call now. And he said, 2 days went by. I think it was 2 days. And he said, I didn't hear anything, but I was just thinking, well, I got it. And he said, I turned on MTV and they made the announcement, the new bass player for the Rolling Stones, Daryl Jones. And he said he was just, his heart just collapsed, you know. And he said, I watched the interview where Keith said, we let Charlie choose.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose Daryl.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
When you mentioned the satellites, real quick, one of our most recent guests, Andrew Kyler from the band Rare Birds in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He goes way back, and he mentioned you and stuff too, but he goes like, yeah, I remember when Dan Baird was working at a guitar store. And then we came to find out later on that Jason was chatting with Steve Gorman, and I guess Andrew like auditioned for the gig that Oddly got.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Steve told me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's great. He has, I don't know if she sings in the Rare Birds, but we have a mutual friend that I've known since I was a teenager.
Suzanne
Sledge. And I actually worked in a record store with her. And she was a wealth of knowledge. Like, again, pre-internet, if I had questions about like who played guitar on the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour, she had it, that information on the tip of her tongue.
Yeah. 6875. That was a great band. We're doing a Georgia Christmas special, and they're going to be on for that. Suzanne's going to be on for that too. So,
well, tell her I said hello. She's great.
I will. Yeah. Well, let's get into Be Right Here. Let's talk about this from conception to completion.
Yeah. Well, we went in the fall or the end of last year. That's when we started pre-production and stuff, and I had written some songs, and it was kind of like we were like, well, let's go make another record. And that was right around the time that Britt had a heart attack, so it was really like, well, we're not going to be in a hurry, because why would we be? And so we went in to Studio A and RCA again with Dave Cobb, and we'd picked out probably about 15 songs, and then I wound up writing a few more, or finishing a few more as we went in. And Dave is funny, you know, he's like, I want to capture as much spontaneity as possible. That's his thing. He likes to make a Bob Dylan record. You know, he doesn't like anybody to have heard the songs, but like me. So like, he's like, I like to capture the way people play something the first time they play the song, you know? And that's very, exciting. And so half of the record is kind of that way. The other half of the songs I was like, too late. I've already played them. Already played them for the boys. but a few songs in particular, well, Little Bit Crazy was one that nobody had heard. And so, and I'm like, well, it's only got four chords in it, so we can't really fuck it up too badly. But it was great. And this time, Dave was, we set up a little differently. We all were, even we even had the drums in the room. And I think he did that with Slash on their last record. He had their entire backline and the drums and the and lead vocals in the room behind a, the, I had to sit kind of behind a baffle. But knowing that you would probably not keep all the scratch vocals, you wind up, you know, recording lead vocals last if need be. But it was really, it made the record sound different to me than You Hear Georgia. And it was recorded in the same room, just the separation that one might have with drums being in a an isolated drum room.
More like a live gig, you know, like playing live.
Yeah. Well, this was way more like, which Dave doesn't, he doesn't use a click or auto tune, or there's no, he shuns technology. And he's just like, you know, as far as a click goes, that grids everything so you can go back and fix mistakes and whatever. But he's like, well, just play good. How about that? So, but this one, we even had amps in the room, you know, and getting the amp bleed into drum mics and things. So he's like, well, don't fuck up. So if you do, then we're playing it again. And so that makes it exciting when you're playing mm-hmm. songs for the very first time, because if you get a good drum track, and if I play an F where it should be an E, then that won't work. So you got to, you know, figure we're around that. But it was good. But we tracked for a week there at RCA, and we had everything, all the basic tracks done for basically. We out of those, we got basic tracks for 14 or 15, and then we wound up choosing our favorite 10. And then we went to his studio in Savannah, where he's from. He has an old house in the swamp to record in. He calls it Georgia May. And we did, finished up overdubs there, guitars and pedal steel and some vocals and things like that. And then we actually came back and then the girls, the Bettys, came in to West End Sound in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That's a studio that Mastodon owns. And
oh, the band Mastodon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And finished up vocals there and mixed there. And Dave was he wound up with COVID. So he let Tom Tapley, the engineer, and I mix it. And we mixed about four songs. And he was like, you guys just go ahead and just send it to me. I know you can, you got it, you know. And Tom worked with us, you know, on Like an Arrow and Find a Light. And so we sent him four songs, four mixes we had done. He was just kind of coming out of COVID and his ears were opened up and he's like, wait, what are you doing? He's like, we're starting over. And we were laughing. I mean, it wasn't much to do with specific mix choices, like this guitar being louder than this one or whatever. It was just specifics that he likes about instruments. Like, no, I want the drums to sound like this. I want mm-hmm. the kick drum to sound like this. I want this to sound like this. One song, he's like, this should sound like Soul Survivor. What are you doing? It should be guitar over here and the reverb of the room's over here. You know, and I'm like, oh, you're right. Yeah, what am I thinking? So that's why he's world renowned Dave mm-hmm. Cobb, because he knows, you know, he knows a thing or two about mixing. But then he came out of being sick and we mixed it and there you go.
What goes into, like, you know, with Like an Arrow, Find a Light, you guys did yourself. So what leads you back to like wanting to get a producer, you know, and then you work with Dave Cobb twice? Is this extra ears or what, how does that decision play out to produce yourselves or have someone produce?
I think with us, specifically with me, it's like, we'll make a couple. And then I'm like, okay, I'm bored with this. I want to try something different. And Dave and I, before we made You Hear Georgia, we had been threatening to make a record for a long time. And because, you know, he's an old Atlanta guy. So, and obviously he just makes fantastic records, no matter who it is. It's never genre specific. And he just makes great records. And who knows what we'll do next, you know? It's like, okay, we've done two, now next method.
we just talked to Kenny Wayne Shepherd yesterday, and they wrote their record in at Fame. They didn't record it there, but have you guys ever toyed with doing anything down there in Muscle Shoals at all? Or
we've talked about it. Never taken the plunge. Would love to, though. Hallowed ground.
So your first two singles you released are Dig a Hole, mm-hmm. A Little Bit Crazy, a little bit different sounds. Like Dig a Hole is a little heavier, and mm-hmm. A Little Bit Crazy's got this gigantic pop hook. What are we expecting kind of the album to be like? Like, is it a little bit of kind of that back and forth, or is it more thematic?
It's the back and forth. It's pretty schizophrenic, as a lot of the records
my
are.
My favorite.
Goes from the big riff to the country song, for lack of a better way to put it.
I had to, someone pointed out to me that the riff and Dig a Hole, they thought it'd come from live version of Testify.
It did.
That kind of breakdown. And I'm glad they did that, because I have to confess, like, when I first heard it, it reminded me of Black Moon Creeping. So I'm glad that someone pointed out that it was from Testify.
Yeah, it was from the live album, the Leave a Scar album. Yeah. And we used to jam that little riff, just the riff mm-hmm. in the middle of that song, and kind of solo a little bit. And I was crazy thing. I was listening to it one day, hadn't listened to it in a long time, and I was like, oh, I remember that. I always looked forward to that part of the song. And then I was thinking, that should be something. It shouldn't just have to live all lonely like this in the middle mm-hmm. of a jam. and I was messing around with where to take it, you know? And I remembered this little piece of music that Brandon Steele had sent me a few years ago that he played on Wurlitzer. And it was this little chord change that became the chorus of Dig a Hole. So it kind of married that together.
You, so like, you're the primary songwriter. I know you write with other people, but just saying that about Brandon, is there like little things that the guys have added at all over the years, like little parts or?
Well, Brandon and I wrote Pearls and Free on the Wing and Dig a Hole. And okay. So, and they all kind of started the same way. He would send me pieces of music that had a sort of a melody of their own. So that it's like, okay, well, this is the start of a song, a riff, really, a riff on the, it's always on the Wurlitzer. I love it when he does that. It's never anything else. That's a great thing. But the other guys don't really, they're not really writers per se. And everybody's not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like every right. band I've ever been in, there have been people who are like, I don't do that, you know? I think that usually it works itself out in a band situation as to who the writers are. Mm-hmm. Then you'd have a band like The Band where everybody writes. So it's, right. you know, or the, obviously the Beatles, which I guess could make it really complicated, or could make it, well, I think in the Beatles case, it made it very complicated because there was so much competition going on with, especially with George. And if you've seen the Let It Be, mm-hmm. That was tough when George is showing them All Things Must Pass and they're totally making fun of it. It's just mm-hmm. like, dude, okay, wow.
Bunch of assholes.
That's tough. But I guess they had established the Lennon and McCartney dynamic, and it's like they probably were looking at George like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to change what we've got going here that works so well? Or then you'll have like the Jagger Richards thing where apparently whoever's idea it is gets sucked into the Jagger Richards vortex and they're like, nope, that's ours. And that's the story with Moonlight Mile, right? That Mick Taylor, that was his riff. And they were like, we'll be having that. Thank you.
Brian, I think I would sit and just listen to you and Charlie talk the Stones all the time, because Brian's a major Stones fan, knows all this stuff, and I'm learning all this stuff. So if you guys just want to do a podcast on the Stones stuff, I'm game.
We could. Yeah.
Discussion on the Stones. Yeah, that'd be cool.
We could.
When you mentioned Brandon, I saw his rig rundown. He talked about it was the Hammond that he found at an old church somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And he's funny that he went to go pick it up. It was one of his Leslies, I think. And he said it's like he walked into prayer meeting and he was just kind of like, hello. And he's standing there with his hair and probably smelling like weed and like, sorry.
Speaking of rig rundowns, we're going to diverge from the record and get back to it in a second. But I know you've done those, but most recently you're on Shredded with Shifty.
Yep, saw that too.
Chris Shifley. Cool. That was an amazing episode. Like, I learned a lot, not only like, you know, the solo to Thunder, but just the dynamic. I didn't realize he did the show. How did that all come about? Like, you getting on there?
Well, he, a handful of years ago, it's during his time with the Foo Fighters. I think he's been in the Foo Fighters since 95 or so, but I remember our agent came to me and said, do you know Chris Shiflett from the Foo Fighters? I said, no, I know who he is, but he said, oh, he's got a band, a solo band, and he would like to come and do a run with us with his solo band, which is kind of more of an Americana, mm-hmm. sort of a country rock band. And I said, okay, yeah. And so they did. And it was fantastic. And he, from the beginning, he was such a friendly, likable guy and no ego at all. And just, it was great. It was a great run. And we wound up doing some more shows after that with him. He came to the Ryman and played with us the last time that we played. And we just became friends. We actually did. He had a podcast of his own already called Walking the Floor. And it was just a talking, type an interview type of thing. No guitar playing on that one. And Britt and I did it. And
yeah, we talked about that. That was great.
We talked about everything from Aerosmith to our love of Hanoi Rocks, to which he wound up, I had no idea, during the podcast. He's like, I actually went and played in Andy McCoy's band in Finland. And I'm like, what? And he said, yeah. And he tried to kill me. It was bad. I mean, he actually, that was an exaggeration, but he did, I think he pulled a knife on him or something. He got so, he was just out of his mind, you know, so that kind of turned into us, Ed, like deepened our friendship, I think. And so when he started doing the Shredding with Shifty, he hit me up and was like, would you like to be a part of this? And you got a little rig at home, you know, for, you know, doing that type of thing. And I said, yeah. And I think I was the first one that he filmed. But man, what a great dude.
I think when you were on Walking the Floor, I believe that's where I heard it, where I think he asked you like to name a specific festival that you enjoyed. And you talked about Hinterland Festival near Des Moines. That was the first time I saw you guys. That was like an 18 or something. Yeah, that was cool. That was a nice, good show. Saw Margaret Price right before you guys. So.
And Sturgill was there.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, and that was he was the headliner. And that was the first time that I saw him with no, it was just a trio. That really great guitar player Lore left, who plays with Driving and Crying now.
Saw you guys at on the streaming of the Beach Life Festival, and I was just tuning in for you guys, and then I hear, and up next Shooter Jennings with his Highwayman tribute, bringing up All Friends. I'm like, he's got to do it. He's got to bring up Charlie. And it's like yes.
Yeah, I had to literally run over and get it done. It was right back to back. That was a great time. The Doobies were great that night.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, you know, how you guys have hand built your band, no FM radio support, you know, just kind of the DIY thing. Is it coincidental? Is there any like influence from the Grateful Dead, how they did their thing?
I think it's coincidental. In our case, it literally was mandatory because we didn't have, or it was necessary rather, because we just didn't have any interest from radio or from a major label I remember having a lunch with a label guy once, with a major label guy in Los Angeles. And I remember he was nice, but we were like, sorry, man, we're just not. And he knew it. He's just like, well, I mean, we can't necessarily compete with what you're doing for yourself without somehow, you know, I know he didn't say it in this many words, but like watering it down or looking to change something that doesn't need to be changed. Change for change's sake, you know. And I don't know. I just thought, well, we're too old to get cute haircuts, and you know what I mean. It's just like
I'm trying to tell you how to look.
I kind of think about, like, I look at the Dead and Widespread Panic and these bands, especially Panic, who mm-hmm. You know, the Dead were obviously, when they were young, and they signed to I guess Warner Brothers initially. Is that right? That there were people that were trying to steer them. And they, maybe they were like, yeah, well, we're going to make records and have hits. And then it was like, nah, we don't really want to do that. Or don't care about that, you know, but Panic seems to me that they just from the get go are like, didn't they, there was an interview with John Bell where he said, person asked him, said, you were offered to come and play like at the, like on Saturday Night Live, or there was something. He goes, well, we like to play songs that are like 20 minutes long. And so that it would never work.
Does not translate well to that format.
So
what did you guys learn when you played with Bob Weir? I know he plays some like different kind of guitar chords. What anything that you picked up from him or learned or got advice or?
Not really playing wise. It was really fascinating to play with him, because he has that it's such a unique rhythmic sense, and just the way that just the little the things that he adds, the way that he plays, it is so odd. I watched his hands and was like, I got to stop looking at his hands. I'm going to get all fucked up and not know where we are, because he plays inversions of chords that are so strange. Yeah. But I just loved listening to his stories and making music with him. You know, it was like, this guy's been playing this Grateful Dead music since he was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a life. But he told me that they played. I said, what's the first Atlanta show you played? And he said, it was in 1970. And he said, we played the Atlanta Civic Center, which is defunct now. I think the building is still there, but I don't think they've had shows there in decades. And I think it was more like a basketball arena at the time. And he said, was it a good show? And he said, the kids were great. It was a great show, but the cops were assholes. He said, we played, and this is just a horrible time for a bunch of hippies to be coming to the South then, you know, or maybe it was 69. It was either 69 or 70. And, he said, yeah, and the cops were standing there with billy clubs. Wow. And Steve Parrish, who was the roadie, you know, this was on the podcast that they were doing at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was sort of like the head tech. And he said, yeah, the cops were like, you got 2 minutes to get this shit out of here. And they were like, what do you mean? You know, and he said they were just jerks. And so one of them dosed one of the cops with a Coca-Cola.
I of all places, I was at Barnes & Noble yesterday, and I was looking at, there was like a show from the Fox, like 71, but instead I ended up buying for $8, Nothing Fancy, Give Me Back My Bullet, Street Survivors, and Pronounced. Like, thank you, Barnes & Noble.
can't go wrong with any of those records.
Brian, are you a Dead guy?
I got a good friend who's originally from California, and he started going in 76 or 7. So it's mostly influence from him, but I'll go in stages. I got American Beauty.
See, Charlie, I didn't know about this about him before, you know, I started doing podcasts.
I'll go in stages where it's like almost like getting, you know, it's like the words to, I forget the song that the Crows play of Mad Dogs and Englishmen, Space Captain or whatever, like flying next to a planet and you get stuck. So like the Grateful Dead will be on for like a month, and then I'm back off to whatever else I listen to.
You know, I loved American Beauty. Somebody gave me a cassette copy of it when I was in just out of high school. Mm-hmm. Those are the songs. Well, that and Working Man's Dead are like the Americana. I loved that. Mm-hmm. And then I would hear like Space or Drums or something, and I'd be like, I'm not really into that. It's not, I'm not that avant-garde, you know. But then I was hanging out with my wife before we were married, when we first met, and she was playing, this is like 16 years ago, and she was playing a show from the Fox. It's a Dick's Picks live album, a show from the Fox in Atlanta in 1977, in the spring of 77, which is like a magical time for the Dead. And that song Sugary, the version of it on there is, the version of it on there is 11 minutes long.
Wow.
And by the time it was over, I was like, I am hooked. That's the feel right there. The lope of that song, you know, and then the way that they were playing everything. And it wasn't experimental that at all. It was just soulful. Now, and there are plenty of, so I went in head first, and I heard somebody else put it this way. They were like, now there are tons of recordings of the Grateful Dead that I can't really stand behind because it would get rough, you know, because it all depended on what kind of drugs Jerry and Phil and Bob might have been doing on any given night. But for the most part, especially as a person in a band, and you think about board tapes and recording, and what they were doing was so revolutionary in recording these songs to be traded among their fan base, they got better and better at it. Like Betty Cantor and the people who were recording those shows, but there's nothing to hide behind. It's just them playing and singing, and you can rarely hear the audience. I wish that you could hear more of the audience's reaction to what they're doing on those recordings.
For sure.
But I listen to it from time to time. I'm like, that's dry and clean, and it's great. It's a lot better than some of our board tapes, I'll tell you that.
Before we wind on, I always got to ask you about, you know, some other artists that you may have hang and camaraderie with. And I was fortunate enough to see, I saw Skinner for the first time in the Cadillac 3 opened. And I really enjoyed those guys. And
yeah,
he said a couple of things. He's talking about when Billy Gibbons gave him a cocaine vial full of peppers, like dried chili peppers. So you got to put it on ice cream and then the magic happens. But he said that Gary Rossington had told him, Theron, right? Is that his name? Did I get that right? Or Jaron. Yeah. Gary Rossington told him, like, when it comes to Southern rock bands nowadays, it's Blackberry Smoke and the Cadillac 3.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I love Jaron. He's an old friend. I've known those dudes. God, they had a band called American Bang, and then they were called Bang Bang Bang. And
Whiskey Walk.
They're just great dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And a great band, too.
Jake?
Yeah, I want to follow up real fast. I've never really delved in the Grateful Dead stuff too much, so I've got a question for you. We had Alan Paul on a couple months ago when he's out promoting his book. Charlie, I think you also got a copy of that too, The Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah. Oh, it's Alan. So good.
It is so good. And they talk about that event in New York, where it was like the band and the Grateful Dead and everybody, and how like the first day, I think they were sound checking or something, and the Grateful Dead were great, but actually the recorded version everybody got a couple days later was awful. So is there for me, a kind of a newbie, something you'd recommend, like a live show or album to check out for somebody to kind of take a step forward?
Europe 72.
Yep.
Europe 72. Okay.
That live record. It's I think of that, like, I love those. The songs on it are great. The playing and the singing. And it's got more that, it sounds more like they would be on tour with the Allman Brothers in the band.
Right? Okay.
They moved into a jazzier sort of direction. There it is. Yeah. They would eventually move into a jazzier sort of direction. And just like all bands evolve, you know, Little Feet, when Little Feet got up to Time Loves a Hero era, they were going that for that same. There were so many of those bands like Weather Report and all that going on. And that all kind of started to seep into people's experience, but Europe 72 is kind of like, it's like they took those real Americana records they made and plugged them in and made them loud.
Yeah. See, that's what I prefer, that style too, versus the improvisational, like more jazzy and kind of what they got into. But that story that he told me intrigued me so much, of how they could be so different and how they were all about the improvisation. I'm like, I'm a little scared because stuff could be all over the place. So asking fans like you guys,
there's a couple of spots on that record where you'll be like, what are they doing? Cause they get a little, they're always going to jam, you know?
Right.
Right. And that's when they really just become like a free form jazz band where anything goes. But that's a more song centric kind of collection of live stuff. And the vocals are good. The 3-part harmonies on it that's before Donna Jean came into the band. So it's Jerry, Phil, and Bob just singing their asses off.
All right, Charlie's picks. I'm writing it down, and Brian has a copy, so I know it's good.
Yeah, for my money, that record has Tennessee Jed, Ramble mm-hmm. on Rose, and He's Gone, and those three songs are worth the price of admission.
Got it. Okay, I'm writing it down.
The other artist I want to ask about, I saw Whiskey Myers again, and one of the openers was Brent Cobb.
Yeah,
I should have anticipated, but it was cool. He came out for bar guitar in a honky tonk crowd. I mean, that's his song. So that band is great, man. It was cool to see them.
Yeah. Brent, he and I wrote a song on Be Right Here.
Okay.
And we have been, it's called What You Know Good.
Is he related to Dave?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Okay.
And Brent and Richard and I went down to Capricorn and made a record for his buddy, Adam Hood. Mm-hmm. At Brent's request, I had never met Adam, and I knew Brent. And anyway, so that was a great experience that week. And while we were down there, we wound up finishing a song that Adam had started. So Brent and I, we finished the song with him that's on his album. And then after that, Brent was like, "Hey, you want to write something? You want me and you to write something?" And I said, "Yeah." So we got together and wrote this song, What You Know Good. You'll love it. It's very J.J. Cale, which that's kind of his vibe, you know. I think he's like the modern day J.J. Cale guy. He's just
And you've toured with J.J., haven't you?
No.
No?
Oh, with J.J. Gray we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not J.J. Cale.
Oh, but, there we go. Okay.
But Brent's got that cool laid back. Sort of an Oklahoma delivery, you know, but he's from South Georgia.
Is Adam Hood related to Patterson?
No.
Okay. All right. They're all like Georgia guys, right, though?
Yeah.
Isn't Patterson from Georgia? Yeah.
Patterson is. Adam's from Alabama, actually, close to where I grew up.
Okay. How many songs on the record, Charlie, should we expect?
10.
10?
Mm-hmm.
What's the release date?
February 16th.
Okay.
Before you
Valentine's Day ish.
Before you ask me why so long, I have an answer. Well, we were looking
predicted the questions.
Yeah, when we first got the master done, meaning the album was mastered, in that time, you know, when we started to put together a plan, our friends at 30 Tigers were like, "Well, it's going to take 6 months to get vinyl back because of." It's just been the domino effect from COVID, supply chain issues, and the line formed, you know, for everyone. And we actually had to change vinyl manufacturers after the whole debacle with our Stoned record, because that mm-hmm. company just screwed us royally. Mm-hmm. I have no love for them. I won't even mention their name because they wouldn't stand behind it, you know, and they left us holding the bag like it's somehow our fault, but whatever. Peace and love.
Go ahead. Sorry.
We had to go out and source a new vinyl manufacturer. We wound up finding a home with a great company. Anyway, so that being said, and this is my long-winded way of explaining, like, well, we're looking at that and we don't want a disjointed release. We want every year for it to be a worldwide synchronized release of vinyl, CDs, digital streaming, merch, tour, everything. So that's what they were like. Well, if you want to do that, it's going to have to be the beginning of next year. So there it is, February 16th.
Last thing I got is when you mentioned that the company that you had to, like, I saw that post with you and Brit, and you're like, someone got a good talking to.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's like there was just quality control was just not there. And that we had no idea until people start opening them, you know, and then it's like, well, shit. I mean, what do you do? And those people are just like, what are we going to do? You know, it's like,
yeah,
like, well, being myself as a consumer, I would say I want to get my money back. You know, that's what people want to do. They want to go get a refund and then you run it again and make it right. And so it just took a long time for them to make that happen. And there was a lot of wringing of hands and frustrating.
I didn't get a dud. My copy actually sounded pretty decent.
Yeah, well, mine was fine too.
I'll tell you this. Mine too. And I have the test pressing. And the test pressing was black vinyl, 180 gram black vinyl. The problematic records were, I'm told, were red. So that pressing of the red, the burgundy ones were the bad ones. So what do you know?
Well, with your new record too, talking about the vinyl, you've got all these great options, like all these packages and options, colors, shirts, everything. And I love it. That seems to be a very big and popular thing for a record release now, all these different kind of collectible versions.
Yeah, it's the new normal, you know. I just got the test pressing about 2 weeks ago, or 10 days ago of it. And I put it on in my house and was like, this is the best sounding vinyl record in our catalog. It is
really
incredible. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I remember feeling that way when the Whippoorwill was first pressed on vinyl. And I was like, oh shit, I'm right back in the studio. I'm in the room now. It's so warm and so real. And you realize how much you do lose with an MP3 or with streaming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Frequencies that you miss,
and like compression and everything too. Yeah.
Yeah. And like Spotify sounds like shit. And I have friends that won't even use it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so popular and so easy. And I actually use Apple Music, but that's been a complaint. It's not just me, you know. I think even Neil Young was like, this is an insult to the people who make this music, because when you stream one of those songs, when you or listening through your Bluetooth speaker, like, this sounds like a tin can. What the hell, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said for the way that when you're listening to recorded music, when you're in a control room listening to a mix through the like NS10s and a sub or whatever, it's never going to sound like that again. Every time it's transferred to another medium,
making a copy, right? The quality gets a little diminished every single time. Yeah.
And I think that's what Neil was going for with Pono. Is that thing that he tried? Mm-hmm. that player. And he was trying to maintain that level of quality from the mix position. And I don't think it worked, but
yeah.
He tried. That was valiant effort.
I mean, digital is nice for the convenience factor, but for quality listening and like time, I'm going to my record player, and like Brian's got one too. And like, you know, I guess where I'm going with this is my hope for how music is now is like when you release these vinyls or physical media, the fans and everybody else who really like the band are going to buy it, or want a quality experience, they're going to buy it, but they're going to stream just for convenience, like in the car on the, you know, walking the dog or whatever, because it's a little harder to take that record player with you.
Yeah. I think there's some, the first time I really noticed it and really was bummed at like the sound of a piece of digital music was Damn the Torpedoes. Cause that record is pristine sounding on vinyl. You know, it was, it was Jimmy Iovine's, it was his benchmark. Like this record sounds perfect. And then you stream it and it's like, it's missing low end and, you know, an impact. And these kids today, they don't know.
They don't know, but like people love the vinyl stuff though. And that's great what you guys are doing.
They do,
the different types of versions.
It is. It's a resurgence that's not dying. It's just growing.
Yeah. And it gives you guys an extra chance to, get paid well for what you do too, outside of just the touring and merch.
Yeah. And it's so enjoyable. Like it's, you know, one of Britt's passions is obviously the artwork and the design and layout. And he's like, look at this. And our records have a photo collage and the shit that we love, that we all love about records and liner notes. And
yeah,
you know, it's another part of the story.
I've got it's Halloween time. So the Return of the Living Dead soundtrack. It's great. It's like this clear with blood splatter all over on the vinyl. It looks fantastic.
Love it. Love it.
I love the Cramps, Roki and Roki. What's that guy's name? Roki or Rocky?
Rocky Erickson?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just gonna pull it out. But anyway, it looks cool and sounds great too. And I love the punk rock stuff on it.
I just got a A Mommy's Little Monster, Social Distortion, the new reissue that has like the split. It almost looks like cookies and cream ice cream. Oh. It's like the speckled white with, you know.
Yeah, and you've got your cool collector thing, but also like a very good quality, you know, listen at the same time.
Yeah.
All right, before we let you go, I know we're getting the end. You got a fall tour set up already. You guys are getting ready to hit the road in November. You're going to play a lot of the new stuff on this tour. You're going to mix it up. What are you going to do?
Gonna mix it up. Gonna do a. Can't tell you. Got to come.
I'm coming. There. So I'm coming. I'm coming to the show in St. Pete Beach. I'm gonna fly down. I think it's a Saturday.
Okay.
It's my dad's around my dad's birthday, so it's good. I get to see them. My parents are gonna be the St. Augustine show the night before because my dad needs to go somewhere where he can sit down. But anyway, where I'm going with this is I was going to see you back in Cincinnati, but then my wife's 30th high school reunion got changed dates and I couldn't go.
Oh.
And so she's making it up for me. So we're going to fly down, see my parents for my dad's birthday, see that show in St. Pete Beach. Very excited by that. I think it's November 11th.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so Florida. I hope it's warm, Charlie.
It will be. It will be.
And I want to hear some of the new stuff, at least a couple of the new tracks.
You got it.
All right, Brian, over to you. We'll get Charlie out of here. I know he's got stuff to do.
Yeah, oh, I'm hoping for some upper Midwest shows, and you know, guys always get up here, but thank you for coming on. And the best thing was we didn't even have to go through your social media assistant.
That's right.
I was the one who got that. Some
Brian busted him.
Yeah, some person sent that to me, and I screenshotted it, blocked that person, put it on the brothers and sisters page because I knew the sheriff would see it, and he messaged me back. He goes, I sent this to Charlie, and he's like, oh brother.
Yeah, they're wow. Tenacious.
Yeah. So no, thank you so much again for being on, Charlie. It means so much to us when you talk to us, and we always just have a great time talking to you. So thank you again.
Same to you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Charlie for coming to chat with us again. Always a joy. I was satisfied that we got to give you a little beginning lesson on the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like there's always a stigma, I think, with Grateful Dead fans, right? And probably some of it's earned. But honestly, reading that book from Alan Paul, when he talks about the Allman Brothers, Grateful Dead, and the band show there at Watkins Glen. I'm looking at my poster. I should have done that during the interview. But it was interesting because Alan went into a lot of detail about the Dead, right? And kind of like, so I was a little bit intrigued, but I do know they can get really go off to places that probably I don't want to hear musically, and to have you and Charlie both make a recommendation meant a lot.
Yeah, that's the thing about them. It's just like some nights they could be the greatest band and some nights not so much. And there is a lot, some of that stuff that gets a little bit, you know, kind of like way out there. And yeah, I like more prefer their stuff that's, you know, not quite as spacey. But yeah. They're just, well, the Dead, they're just a band that kind of like it exemplifies that fact that they can rock and roll, country, blues, gospel, and all that stuff. I mean, they play all that together. So it was good to hear, you know, how Charlie got into them. What else? I enjoyed.
I thought it was good. Like, I like the Americana style stuff. And like, if that's the Europe 72. I mean, I love the song Sugaree. I've heard Chris Robinson cover it. I've heard Tennessee Trucks do it. It's a great song, like Uncle John's Band. Like, I like a couple of the songs that kind of fit in that country rock, Americana rock style of theirs.
I enjoyed the story about Brandon Steele going to pick up an organ.
And it was smelling like weed. I liked your guys' Rolling Stones conversation because I love the Stones music, but I am no means a historian about who played what when. Yeah. And like you guys being able to correct me, like these guys are more tech guys or whatever. And talking and his getting his take on the new record, I thought was super cool too.
Yeah. And then I like the new record too. I like some of it where it's like more reminiscent old style, but there is a little bit, I agree to Charlie. There's a little bit of like, kind of like Mick Jaggerism kind of.
A little more slick, I don't want to call it pop music, but like definitely a little bit not as rough, kind of the blues rock that maybe some of the old, you know, the older school stuff would be. Sounds good though. It's a fun record. Absolutely. Even to have on the background, like it's a background soundtrack while you're working or doing something else too.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into too much. We're going to have a Rolling Stones record review. Yeah.
Yep. What else? So, you know, I enjoyed, talking about Dave Cobb and Brett Cobb and Cadillac 3. Yeah. All that stuff was great. So that's just wonderful. So
he could tell stories forever. And like, you know, we didn't intend to talk about the Stones or the Dead, but just hearing him and you guys talk about that stuff is just so interesting, and a vast wealth of musical knowledge that both of you guys have. It's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So we had a good time as always with Charlie. You will have a good time with Charlie, seeing him live or talking to him. Some have, and y'all know what we mean. So
pre-order the record.
Pre-order the record. Get the vinyl. Do it. Do it now.
Get the shirt.
Yep. And the shirt. So always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
Crazy. Oh.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.